Next on our agenda, we will hear item 3, Judicial Council Legislative Priorities. This is a status report. Welcome, Kurt.
Thank you, Chief. Good afternoon. I just was going, as you all know, we are zeroing in on the final hours of the legislative session this year. The legislature will wrap up at midnight tomorrow night. And what that means is this is the time where a lot of exciting things can or cannot happen. This is the time where there are bills that are gutted and amended and new ideas pop up and old ideas pop up. And it's literally watching by the hour. There are some efforts to get some provision that may ultimately impact the courts into legislation. So I will say that our crack OGA staff is back watching every move as it's playing out on both houses and both floors as they're trying to go through literally hundreds and hundreds of bills in this remaining few hours. As you recall, the primary legislative priority for the council this year was the budget, and you've all had plenty of reports now on the outcome of the budget, so I won't spend any time on that. But I did want to just quickly give you a couple of updates on legislation as it's moving by the minute off the floor, and then talk a little bit about the issue of the day on pensions. A couple of bills that I want to make sure folks understand where they're at. AB 1481, that's the trailer bill cleanup, and the provision that was included in 1481 was the jury fee provision. As you recall, part of the budget package that we had worked on in putting together $50 million in new fees for trial court operations included a new approach for jury fees that essentially moved those up in time and made them non-refundable to generate about $11 million. After a month or two of implementation, that ended up, I think, having a unforeseen impact because it was focusing on fee paid by each party. So working with the plaintiff's bar, the defense bar, I think we came up with a proposal that really focuses on one fee each side, and we're quite assured that and have a level of confidence that the revenue won't be impacted. So that provision would still generate $11 million. That bill has gone to the governor. AB 1477 is a budget bill. Follow up, the only particular issue and note in there for us is you've heard the discussion about the $29 million error in the budget bill. That's being fixed in that budget bill, and that's on the assembly floor right now in concurrence. AB 2073, congratulations to Orange and the effort that they've been working. That's the pilot project for e-filing in the Orange Court, but also the direction for the council to develop a rule court for e-filing statewide. That's been sent to the governor as well. AB 2442 that Justice Baxter had mentioned has been an interesting bill to work on. That's the HOPE Trust that would essentially create a body that would look at all state properties, make a determination whether they are underutilized. If they are underutilized, they can be brought in, managed by this HOPE Trust, and the revenue generated from that would go to higher education. So we spent a fair amount of time working with the author and with the sponsor of the bill, SEIU, to get some amendments to exclude judicial branch facilities. Although we didn't get a blanket amendment, we're pretty confident that with the amendments that did make it in, that most court facilities will not be included within that. Interestingly, that was a bill that had been dead held up on the Appropriations Committee suspense file, and that's one of those that just popped off again. And so it was moving. So fortunately, we did have the amendments. That bill just went to the governor. AB 1875, that's the deposition time limits bill. As that got negotiated through the course of the year, we wanted to ensure that there were minimum impacts on the courts, on hearings on those. There are now several exemptions built into that. That bill has gone to the governor. AB 2078, that was a court reporter fee, and that was mentioned. There were some corrections on that, but also would have allowed courts where the fees generated to retain that fee. That one did get held on the appropriation suspense file, and so is not moving. Just a couple of other issues that were hanging out there. You know, this is one where you've really got to watch the issues, and that was CEQA. You've all been reading the newspapers about the interest in CEQA reform. There were discussions about big changes potentially to CEQA, but also one that we were concerned about is potential amendments to AB 900 from last year that essentially gave original jurisdiction in specifically defined projects to the Court of Appeals, so bypassing the trial court. There was talk about expanding that to include some additional projects. That ended up not happening, and leadership announced that they were not interested in doing any CEQA reform this year, but they are going to come back next year and take on, I think, CEQA as a broader package, so that conceptually could have some impact. Another bill that was moving, SB 1186, that was follow-up from the ADA. This is a bill to curtail litigation generated by the ADA. There had been some letters from U.S. senators saying that we need to get a handle on this, and if the state doesn't, so we were involved in negotiations on that. That bill is on the assembly floor, and I think we got some provisions and extensions of time for the court. So those are some of the major issues that are hanging out here in the last few days. I wanted to mention now pensions that the chief had referred to a little earlier in the efforts that were happening on that. You know, there were discussions that came up last year about the need to get to pension reform, and then a number of bills introduced this year, and a conference committee put together to look at doing major pension reform. The governor had a major 12-point proposal that he put out this year that he was hopeful that he could get the legislature to go along with. As often happens with big packages, big issues, you don't really get them done until there is the pressure of the timeline in the last few days. And true to their practice, that's how this one happened. There was a little murmuring that perhaps this would get done before the recess in August. There was some language that was being shared. They couldn't reach an agreement, and so it didn't happen. There were efforts then after they came back to try and reach some agreement, and ultimately the governor announced on Tuesday that the administration had reached an agreement with the legislature on a pension reform package. And then Tuesday evening, 6:30, as I recall, the conference committee was pulled together. The language was handed out to the public, not in print language, but actually just ledge council language to look at. Conference committee debated that for an hour or so, and then passed it out with only Democrats voting for it, Republicans staying off of the bill. That because it's a conference report that sends it now directly to the floors. There's a two-day period that it's got to be sitting on the floor. So that means it's got to be heard tomorrow before midnight, and it's essentially an up or down vote on the bill. So there's no chance for amendments to be happening on this bill. It is a single bill. There was some discussion of whether there would be multiple bills on it. I think the governor was insistent that it be a single bill, single package that came out of conference. And that bill now is AB 340. I thought I'd just take a couple of minutes to talk a little bit about the impact on trial court and state judicial branch employees, and then Judge Rubin, if you want to then take a minute and perhaps talk a little bit about the JRS provisions. The major restructuring in the plan really only applies to new employees, but there are some key provisions that do apply to current employees. The primary impact for current employees is in provisions that seek to get equal cost sharing, so 50-50 cost sharing in the normal costs for employees and employers, based on which vary by formula. And there are some specific limits on these provisions that make them subject to collective bargaining. So ultimately, at a local level, these will be collectively bargained, but come January 1, 2018, essentially the equal sharing has got to be in place in those plans. For state employees of the judicial branch, there's a provision that states that it's the standard, whatever that might mean, that state employers and employees equally share in the costs as well, and that includes some language about requiring adjustments in retirement contribution rates. But the timing and the calculation is not specified. So one of the many areas in which there is room for, I think, further clarification. Some other changes that impact current and new employees include requirement that employment-related felonies that would lead to a forfeiture of pension benefits, as well as a waiting period of 180 days before post-retirement public service can begin. For new employees, they would be subject to a new pension plan structure that would apply across the board to virtually all non-public safety employers, and that would include counties that contract with CalPERS, or if they're 37 Act counties. And again, JRS remains in their own system and so wouldn't be included. But the new plan would have a formula now. So this is new employees after January 1, 2013, would have a formula of 1% at 52, 2% at 62, and so a maximum at 2.5% at age 67. So clearly an incentive to try and get longer employment. The major provision that was that the governor had put out and had pushed for most of the year was a hybrid plan. So a defined benefit and as well as a contribution. The legislature was never supportive of that proposal. The compromise was essentially a salary cap, that is an eligibility to receive benefits up to, or pay on the benefits up to $110,000. So like Social Security works, you hit the cap, you pay Social Security up to your cap. After that, you no longer have any contributions. So that's $110,000. Actually, $110,100 for employees that participate in Social Security, $132,200 for those who do not participate in Social Security. That gets adjusted, interestingly, by a consumer price index. and any income that's above the cap wouldn't be part of the defined benefit calculation and would not be subject to retirement contributions. There's also provisions for new employees limiting what can be considered as a base salary. So this is no longer being able to build. Year-end increases on your last year benefits, so including sick leave, vacation leave, so forth, in the calculation. So let me just say that this bill is an extraordinarily complicated bill to understand. Again, it was put together really late. It's hard to know exactly how much is intended vagueness, and I think there is intended vagueness built into this bill, and how much might have been less than careful drafting at this point. But again, there's not an opportunity to get the bill amended. It will go for an up or down vote, but we will continue tracking and working with the stakeholders on understanding better. I think we are getting something out to you all and the courts on the non-judicial employees, court employees, and we've got out, as mentioned, with CJA and the council, a description there. So I'll stop, and Judge Rubin, if you want to talk a little bit about where we're at on JRS, and then I just have a quick closing comment.
Thank you, Kurt, for that great update. As Kurt's described, this has been a very long process. I'm going to be probably necessarily vague because, as you hear, kind of how it unfolded. But I want to start with thanking Kurt and his staff and Tracy Kenny for their amazing work, Dave Rosenberg, Lee Edmond, the chief, Brad Hill, who's not here, Doug Miller, CJ's own Mike Belote for all the kind of long hours and difficult work. We've been working on this for over a year. Kind of our strategy has been to sort of educate the folks in the Capitol about the unique aspects of judicial retirements. Things really started to percolate about a week ago. On Thursday, I get a call basically to get up to the Capitol. Things are about to break loose. I leave on Friday thinking things are contained. Get a call from the chief at 3:30. Things are not contained. Of course, I'm on a plane. the weekend was very, very active. We had not a great weekend. By the end of the weekend, it seemed like things were contained. As Kurt described it, the language comes out at 6 o'clock in the evening. We are there at 6:30. We're in the evening. We get it, by the way, at the same moment all the legislators got it, including the author, who in a stunning, I think for all of us in the audience, kind of moment of candor when complained to by one of the Republican members, how can you, after 2 years, bring this to us on the, at 6 o'clock when the hearing starts, and we have to go through 38 pages of language, who then said, I haven't seen it either. Forward we went. We looked through it and found that the bill was crafted kind of in the wee hours of Sunday morning and on through till Tuesday, when Department of Finance kind of gave its final language, or the agreements were all reached for different labor groups, including judges. And we found that the bill is complex and has lots of areas of nuances. And by the end of the hour hearing, it was CJA's and I think Kurt's position as well that this was a bill that needed further study, and certainly as it affected judges. There were some things that seemed more clear than others. We looped back the next day with legislative staff to confirm that the intention of the parties to have the judges, for very, very good policy reasons, judges that were judges prior to December 31 of this year, excluded from some provisions, to make sure that intention was actually carried out. Leg staff took the position that it was a complicated bill and they needed to study it further, too, to make sure that the administration, the legislature, and everyone's understanding was being carried out effectively. We've had more conversations yesterday afternoon and into this morning, which were reflected in the article in Daily Journal, with comments made by the Speaker's office and others, which put me in a better mood today than I was yesterday, the day before, as some people who were on the conference call could hear. We have not heard PERS's feedback on this. Of course, they administrate JRS and JRS2. We have not heard their feedback. We, of course, want to get that before we make any further plans. I can say that it was anticipated. When we talked to LED staff, they fully anticipated there were a lot. There are other groups who are going in there who felt like the understandings they had reached with the administration and legislature were not reflected perhaps as clearly and starkly as they wanted to see in the language of the bill. So everybody's fully anticipating urgency legislation in January to clean up some loose ends. It is open whether or not we actually have any loose ends. I am very confident that no matter that everybody kind of went back into their corners, the legislature, I think the administration and us, just to make sure that we actually need any cleanup, if legislation at all. Otherwise, I'm very confident that certainly by January this will be in place just exactly as everybody thought it would. You should just know that you have in the Judicial Council's staff tireless folks who are working in OGA and at CJA. I'm not tireless, but I'm working as hard as I can. I seem to fatigue a little earlier than Kurt, who keeps going. Certainly at some point at 10 o'clock at night, I'm ready to call it, and he's just getting ready to go. So anyway, I hope that clears it up as much as I'm prepared to do right now. But I also want to say this. You know, I fight for judges, but I want everyone to be clear in this room that I am mindful of the very difficult and profound hit that other folks in our courthouses will be facing as a result of this pension reform. One thing that gets lost, of course, is that JRS 2 was reformed 20 years ago, a lesson that doctors tell us is never be first, and we have now learned that. We went first, nobody followed, and 20 years later they're coming back to get us again. But we are mindful of what everybody else is going through, and no matter what, here are our thoughts. Any questions for me or for Kurt?
Judge, and I would just add, so the long and the short of that is that we have a pretty firm understanding that the entire intent was that there is no equal sharing for JRS 1 or JRS 2, but for appointees after January 1, 2013, there would be equal sharing, and that is not an insignificant increase.
No,
by any means.
To be clear, JRS 1 judges are looking at a $36,000 increase to their contribution annually. JRS2 judges would be looking at a $12,000 increase annually. I was trying not to get too... There are many kind of big-ticket features in this plan. I think we're in good shape. And I did want to say that why I'm in a much better mood today is that it seems like everybody is prepared to stand by all of the understandings. And so with that, it's clear that we will get to where we need to get.
And one other thing, Judge Kaufman, I'll just say to be clear that the assigned judges program is not impacted by the other changes that would affect other current employees, so the waiting periods and so forth. So that part is clear. We're pretty solid. The language takes care of any concerns we'd have on post-employment retirement.
And to be clear, I think what we're talking about are nuances in language. I think there was perhaps other wording that would have avoided some of the concerns that we have, but really we believe the bill will do exactly what it says it's going to do for current JRS 1 and JRS 2 judges. And so we are confident at the end of the day it'll be fine.
Judge Kaufman?
Just two things real briefly. Here we have Kurt and Tracy Kenny fighting for our benefits when their benefits are being eviscerated. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate that. That is just fantastic. And when people say the AOC needs to be gutted and all that, what are we're just shooting ourselves in the foot, guys. You know, we need these people. And the other thing is, I think, and as an ex-CJA president, I know what David went through a little bit more than most people do, but he's done a great job, and Mike Blow did a great job, and it surely demonstrates that when the Judicial Council and the CJA and the judges in the state and the AOC staff work together, that we can be very successful. And I think that's something we need to build on. But I to everybody who was involved in this AB 340, I say thank you very much.
You're welcome. It is a team effort, but I have to tell you, everybody in this, all the judges in this room, and I think actually everybody in this room who's a branch employee owes a great debt of thanks to Tracy Kenny. I've never seen someone read. First of all, she's a pension expert, but she's quick. She boils it right down. She tells you exactly, you know, where to focus. She was wonderful.
Yeah. The only unfortunate thing is too bad that we were not permitted to be at the table during the course of the drafting of this legislation, because I think any questions would have been resolved with the expertise of Tracy and Kurt, and that's the disappointing thing. And in contrast to the process that we're going to be going through, in terms of the SEC report, which will be open and deliberate and thorough.
Judge Rosenberg.
Yes, my hat is off to Dave Rubin and Mike Belote and the CJA folks, as well as Kurt and Tracy and all the OJA folks who were working hard on this. I have a quick question on the Hope Trust, Kurt. Mm-hmm. You had mentioned that, and good work on that as well, by the way. You had mentioned that most of court facilities are out of that loop. That implies that some court facilities might still be in the potential scope of the Hope Trust. Do you recall, as you sit here today, which court facilities might still be captured in that net?
I don't recall the specific, but I think somewhere around 4 or 5 potentially could be. And the process that's set up within the bill is before there was actually the trust would have the authority to take the property, is it has to go back to the legislature. So we would have a shot back both with the board of this newly created trust, should the governor sign this bill, and secondly would have another shot at the legislature.
You say 4 or 5, you mean total?
Total, statewide. Total,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Facilities,
okay,
that's right. And,
work.
And they're really, you know, facilities that are neither courthouses, property that would be used for courthouses, that are not parking, that the state owns, that would potentially be subject to the...
So the good news is only 4 or 5, but the bad news is they're all in Yolo County. So.
I forgot to mention that.
Judge O'Malley. Judge O'Malley and Kim Turner, both on the policy committee, when the matter was initially submitted to the policy committee, the language did not pass muster, and there was concern that it should be tightened up, and as a result, they, working with Tracy, did tighten it up, so I wanted to make sure they were recognized for their contributions.
Thank you, Justice. If I may, kudos to Kurt and Tracy, especially on that matter. At the very get-go, it was a scary prospect at the very beginning. And what it's come down to is what we were worried about was whether or not, because of the closures that we're all going to be facing and more closures in the future, that those would be at risk. So we wanted to make sure that no county who had to be subject, because of the budget cuts, to lose their courthouses, that would be lost. And so Tracy really was the artful master, and Kim, of course, really, really tightened that up to make it clear that if it's a court closure, that's not subject to this. And so, again, the properties that are possibly at risk and not guaranteed at risk, at the most 6. Excellent. It was really great job by OGA staff.
Chief, if I might, just not to be in the Mutual Admiration Society here, but this, I do want to really recognize the efforts that Judge Rubin had made in the time that he had spent over the course of the whole year and even before with this. And we actually had a little fun a few times in this. Camped out in either Mike Belote's office or in our office or in the hallways. And again, Mike Belote, the able representative for CJA and the work that that we had. And we were making our visits arm in arm on this. And so it was a strong positive message that we were able to convey. And I do want to point out, too, thanks to you, Chief, for being available at all times, all hours for meetings and calls and rushing over to the Capitol for conversations and meeting there. So this truly meets, I think, all of the requirements of a group effort that I think in light of, you know, the potential scope of what was being considered in statewide for every employee, every public employee and public entity, that this I think was a outcome that was probably as good as we could see. We could hope that it will hang that way. Chief, if I might, just as this is the end of the session for us, and has been noted, we've got really crack staff in the Office of Governmental Affairs who track the bills, who carry the legislation that's sponsored by the Judicial Council and work those through, oppose the bills and all the sensitivities that go along with that in opposing them and trying to work out solutions. The thing you don't see is literally daily the hundreds of bills that are amended that our staff goes through, literally every one of those, to look to make a determination on whether there is going to be an impact on the judicial branch, because as you might guess, there is not always complete candor in legislation on who might be impacted. And so literally they spend hours and hours just watching daily, and particularly when we get down to these last few weeks when amendments are coming fast and furiously. So they really, I think, Chief, do a great job for the council and for the courts on ensuring that we are protected to the greatest extent possible on the legislative outcomes. Thank you.
Thank you, Kurt.